I recently finished Michael Behe's Darwin Devolves, and my reading experience alternated between extreme annoyance and extreme boredom. Lest I be accused of bias against anything critical of materialism or Darwinism, I just read the extremely controversial Mind and Cosmos by the philosopher Thomas Nagel. I loved it, and I immediately read it a second time. The book is mind-bending and demanding at times, it's unorthodox, and most strikingly, to me at least, Nagel manages to criticize materialism with regard to philosophy of mind, discuss the rational intelligibility of the universe, and explore teleology at length without the conversation devolving into theism. With the exception of some extremely embarrassing, cringe-inducing praise for Michael Behe and Stephen Meyer at the beginning, it's not as bad as most people have made it out to be. He's not an evolution denier, for one. He does not reject our common ancestry. He doesn't really deny the power of natural selection, and he doesn't support intelligent design. Most of his skepticism is directed towards abiogenesis, as well as the role of random mutation, which is getting pretty close to the negative arguments made by ID proponents, but it should be noted in any discussion of intelligent design that criticisms of Darwinism need to be separated from the leap to design. The design inference is an extra step that comes after the negative criticisms of Darwinism, and it has to be justified on its own merit. Nagel is skeptical that chance alone led to the original formation of life. He's also uncomfortable with the idea that random, chance mutations would have generated, even over geological time, the raw material that natural selection would need to choose from. These are very similar to criticisms from proponents of ID, but as a million people have pointed out, making the design inference from these criticisms is an unjustified leap. You can point out gaps in our knowledge without appealing to magic to fill those gaps. Again, Nagel is an atheist, and he doesn't come close to advocating creationism of any kind. In Philosophy of Mind, Nagel advocates a form of neutral monism, the view that the fundamental stuff of the universe is neither material nor mental, but some third thing that we may not have a word for or a concrete idea of, hence neutral, though it is only one thing slash substance, hence monism. This is contrasted with the traditional alternatives of materialism, dualism, and idealism. Materialism and idealism are both monisms. They both say there's only one type of stuff, and they both make strong claims about the nature of that stuff. Idealists think all is ultimately mind, and materialists think that all is ultimately non-conscious matter. Dualists think that there are two types of substances, mental and material, that interact with one another from their separate realms. Interestingly, Nagel argues that the neutral monistic framework potentially allows for the reintroduction of teleology, without departing from naturalism or monism. And I don't want to spend too much time on his arguments for neutral monism, because Nagel doesn't himself. He instead wants to explore the conceptual space that opens up as a result of accepting neutral monism. So let me quote Nagel here. "The scientific revolution of the 17th century, which has given rise to such extraordinary progress in the understanding of nature, depended on a crucial limiting step at the beginning. It depended on subtracting from the physical world, as an object of study, everything mental, consciousness, meaning, intention, or purpose." End quote. Galileo, like Descartes and like the behaviorists who would come later, decided to eliminate the subjective from our study of the world. This wasn't a denial of the existence of consciousness. It was an adoption of a methodology that was much easier to work with, since it eliminated all the inaccessible, personal, and subjective from the world, which made it much easier to study everything else. We just sort of put consciousness in brackets, because it's too hard to study objectively. But some have taken this too far, or rather, failed to understand what had been going on. What began as a methodological eliminativism gradually morphed into metaphysical eliminativism. Nagel and many others resist this strongly. Nagel doesn't want to put the subjective in brackets any longer. He wants to integrate mind with the bigger picture. He wants all our knowledge to hang together. He wants a grand, unified picture of the universe. According to Nagel, this will just never happen on the paradigm we've been operating on that Galileo started. The possibility is ruled out by definition. The physical sciences can objectively describe beings like ourselves. They can describe our behavior and our physical structure, but what they can't describe is our subjective experiences. The neuroscientist, Giulio Tononi, said, quote, "Materialism, or its modern offspring, physicalism, has profited immensely from Galileo's pragmatic stance of removing subjectivity, mind, from nature in order to describe it and understand it objectively, from the extrinsic perspective of a manipulator slash observer. but it has done so at the cost of ignoring the central aspect of reality from the intrinsic perspective, experience itself. End quote. We should probably take a moment to explain what Nagel means by consciousness. He's famous for giving a definition of consciousness in the 70s that greatly clarifies discussions around philosophy of mind. If it's like something to be, it's conscious by Nagel's definition. It's deceptively simple, but it captures the fundamental essence of what's important and interesting about consciousness. A being is conscious if there's something that it is like to be that creature. In other words, if there is some subjective way the world seems from the creature's mental or experiential point of view. If it's like something to be alive. It's presumably not like anything for a cork or for a chair, but it is like something to be alive, for you or for me, or for a bat or a cow. In his essay, What Is It Like to Be a Bat?, he notes that bat experience, in all likelihood, is quite different from human experience, but it is nonetheless like something to be a bat. So let me quote Nagel here. There can be a purely physical description of the neurophysiological processes that give rise to an experience, and also of the physical behavior that is typically associated with it, but such a description, however complete, will leave out the subjective essence of the experience, how it is from the point of view of its subject, without which it would not be a conscious experience at all. Consciousness is widely considered to be a mystery, but if that's the case, why has Nagel been met with such fierce criticism? He's arguing that it seems like such a mystery in part because we're using an objective tool that can only tell us about the structure and behavior of stuff to try to understand the intrinsic and subjective nature of chunks of matter like ourselves. To quote Nagel again, the physical sciences, in spite of their extraordinary success in their own domain, necessarily leave an important aspect of nature unexplained. Further, since the mental arises through the development of animal organisms, the nature of those organisms cannot be fully understood through the physical sciences alone. Since the long process of biological evolution is responsible for the existence of conscious organisms, and since a purely physical process cannot explain their existence, it follows that biological evolution must be more than just a physical process, and the theory of evolution, if it is to explain the existence of conscious life, must become more than just a physical theory. End quote. So for those who might be a little bit put off by his language, which sounds kind of diminishing to physicalism and materialism, we have to remember that Galileo and Descartes, they set consciousness to the side from the beginning to try to understand things objectively. When Nagel uses that word, physical, or in other places, material, or reductive, he's trying to remind us that we've been eliminating the subjective component from science from the beginning for methodological reasons. So why on earth are there all these people who think that a purely physical, materialist, reductive account will be able to explain the stuff that we intentionally put in brackets at the start? Nagel is simply arguing that we should take consciousness out of those brackets. And when you do that, lots of strange things happen. Again, he's arguing that we'll just be doomed to fail if we're using a tool that can only tell us about the objective, external structure and behavior of something to try to understand the intrinsic and subjective nature of something. And I'm sure many of you are thinking, okay, what kind of pseudoscientific woo bullshit is he trying to sneak in here? But when Nagel says that biological evolution must be more than just a physical process, he's pretty conservative about what that more actually is. He's just pointing out the obvious and reminding us that we put conscious experience in brackets at the beginning of all this. And if we're going to unbracket it, our picture of the universe will probably change by a lot. This would mean, in Nagel's words, quote, that the scientific outlook, if it aspires to a more complete understanding of nature, must expand to include theories capable of explaining the appearance in the universe of mental phenomena and the subjective points of view in which they occur. Theories of a different type than any we have seen so far. End quote. When you move to neutral monism, all kinds of strange possibilities present themselves. It's also worth mentioning that Bertrand Russell was a neutral monist, and he's about as skeptical and hard-headed as they come. So before I read Mind and Cosmos, I thought the big story was Nagel's support for neutral monism, or some version of panpsychism, and his skepticism towards materialism and aspects of Darwinism. But I found the latter half of the book to be much more interesting. He wants the notion of teleology to return to our conception of nature, completely untethered to theism. He says that some Greek philosophers apparently managed to do this, and Nagel thinks teleology was prematurely exorcised from our language. The death of God does not mean the death of teleology. He argues for something he calls natural teleology, that non-emergent purpose can exist without God. Natural teleology holds that principles of self-organization, or of the development of complexity over time, exist in addition to the laws governing matter currently or traditionally imagined. And as far as I understand, this is made possible through his neutral monism. Natural teleology aspires to provide a framework that can eventually lead to intelligible stories describing the jump from chemistry to biology without a huge appeal to randomness. There's lots of great work in abiogenesis, but all the stories involve wildly improbable events, despite the fact that life formed on Earth very quickly. Scientists have been happy to appeal to deep time, which would allow for vanishingly improbable events to take place. Theists obviously are happy to say it was an intelligent designer, but Nagel doesn't like either of these answers, and he thinks there must be a rationally intelligible explanation for the transition of chemistry to life. He also thinks natural teleology can potentially help us with the, quote, random mutations that provide the candidates for natural selection to choose from. He thinks that leaning so heavily on randomness for crucial parts of the story is basically a cop-out, and natural teleology is his speculative alternative to explain the self-organization and development of complexity that we witness, and that eventually led to human beings. Perhaps appealing to chance and randomness as we do in abiogenesis and random mutation will someday be seen as analogous to the 18th century atheists who thought that rats and flies were spontaneously generated from piles of filth. Partially motivated by the conviction that the universe is rationally intelligible, Nagel wants an explanation of events in natural history that doesn't entirely rely on randomness and chance. Think about life on Earth. Life formed relatively quickly on Earth, after the Earth itself formed. Once the conditions on our planet weren't impossibly hostile to life, life arose very soon after. In other words, almost as soon as it was possible for life to arise on Earth, it arose. Nagel believes that an adequate explanatory framework must not merely be compatible with life and with consciousness, but actually entail that these dramatic and central features of reality are to be expected, and that there is some propensity in nature for life and consciousness to arise. Since he doesn't see such a propensity anywhere in physics, he thinks the conventional view by itself fails as an explanation. He speculates that the standard scientific picture could be augmented by a non-physical notion of teleology, directedness towards a purpose. Nagel is thinking of something fundamental. Quote, teleology requires that successor states have a significantly higher probability than is entailed by the laws of physics alone. This book has a bad reputation, but I think this is less a consequence of the actual content of the book and more a consequence of Nagel's provocative presentation. His subtitle is Why the Materialist, Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. ID proponents also jumped on the book enthusiastically, which didn't help anything, but really Nagel is only advocating adjustments to the materialist Neo-Darwinian conception of nature, not a wholesale rejection of it. He's an atheist and a naturalist, and he makes that perfectly clear. His neutral monism and natural teleology are unorthodox, but they aren't a threat to naturalism or atheism. On the contrary, they're a threat to theism and creationism. Nagel, unlike many other atheists and naturalists, myself included, actually takes the criticisms of Darwinism posed by ID proponents seriously, and he presents a naturalistic answer to these problems. Natural teleology, on his account, could provide an answer to the sheer improbability of abiogenesis, as well as make random mutation a lot less random. I'm not saying Nagel is right, but it's undeniable that he takes ID's criticisms of Darwinism seriously and answers them without any appeal to theism. He answers them as a naturalist and an atheist. Nagel also discusses the rational intelligibility of the universe, which is always something I've taken as a brute fact, and probably still do. He provides a fascinating exploration of the intelligibility of the universe, and again, somehow without sympathy for theism. I guess that's one of the reasons the book made such an impression on me. It doesn't fit neatly anywhere. It's a valuable, fun, idiosyncratic book, and he alienates everybody. He criticizes materialism, Darwinism, and intelligent design, explicitly rejects theism, and argues for natural teleology and neutral monism. The general reaction of readers, however, was not so positive. Steven Pinker called it the shoddy reasoning of a once great thinker. Jerry Coyne wrote, Nagel is a teleologist, and although not an explicit creationist, his views are pretty much anti-science and not worth highlighting. I obviously disagree, and not just because you can get teleology without God. Most people wouldn't be caught dead giving a favorable review of Mind and Cosmos, but in my opinion, the reputation of the book makes everyone involved look bad. Intelligent design proponents, happy to be taken seriously for once, hilariously extol the book. They don't seem to realize that while the book does take them more seriously than they're probably used to, it also provides naturalistic answers to all their objections. I guess they only read the subtitle. And in Darwin Devolves, Michael Behe breathlessly praises Mind and Cosmos. Naturalists, atheists, and Darwinists, on the other hand, seem to perceive the book as a threat, which is mostly Nagel's fault for failing to make clear that he's making adjustments to the dominant paradigm and not rejecting it in favor of theism or mysticism. His proposed adjustments are radical, to be sure, but it's flatly untrue to say he's rejecting evolution or naturalism. I read the book twice and I still want to think more about it, especially natural teleology. It was surprisingly refreshing to hear a challenge to the mainstream consensus that wasn't theistic or ultimately motivated by theism. And that's because theism is boring. It really does just boil down to magic. You can make the arguments appear as sophisticated as you want, but you're still just arguing that a bigger version of you with magic powers is the explanation. I can't say I recommend Mind and Cosmos if you don't enjoy reading philosophy papers. Nagel isn't as good of a writer as, say, Galen Strawson, who has some things in common with Nagel, but is far more readable and comprehensible. I would recommend it, however, if you're looking for an interesting, challenging philosophical work that argues for a point of view way outside the mainstream, but isn't theistic. If you've never heard of Thomas Nagel, you should seriously consider reading his book Mortal Questions. It's honestly one of my most frequently read essay collections of all time. If you're looking for a not as crazy sounding discussion of Nagel's topics in Mortal Questions and Mind and Cosmos, I would read Galen Strawson instead. Strawson also talks about moral luck, monism, consciousness, panpsychism, and advancing an expanded version of naturalism and physicalism. He's an amazing writer and probably my favorite philosopher as of late. Thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time.